Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. So if you've been visiting the site for the past few years, you're probably familiar with the company called Huckberry. It's an online e-commerce store company that sells products and gears directed towards men who happen to like doing sort of outdoor adventure stuff. We do a weekly giveaway with them. We do a curated shop with them at the holidays and at Father's Day. We're an affiliate of them. We're business partners of them. So anytime you make a purchase through our Huckberry link, we make a small percentage from that, and that helps support the website and everything that goes along with it. Anyways, I wanted to bring on the two co-founders of Huckberry to share their story of how they started Huckberry, because it's a really cool story of a successful bootstrap startup. Andy Forch, Richard Greiner, they started Huckberry when they were relatively young, mid-20s, out of their apartment, and now it's grown into this large business in about 4 or 5 years, where they have an office and a warehouse, and they're employing over a dozen different people to do their job to fulfill their sales. So I want to get them on to share their story of how they started a successful business, because I know a lot of you listening to the podcast are wanting to do that, become entrepreneurs, start your own business. So I wanted to have Andy and Richard share their story and their insights and their mistakes they made along the way, so you can get something from it. Also, I wanted to get their insights about something. I get stuff sent to me all the time from brands and people who are wanting to start some sort of male lifestyle product, brand, or whatever. And Huckberry gets that 100 times more. And I wanted to get Richard and Andy's insight on what separates the winners and losers from companies or brands wanting to sell a product that's directed towards men. So if you've had sort of an idea kicking around of starting a men's lifestyle product, brand, or whatever, you'll want to listen to this, because you'll get some really good insights, I think, from some people who know firsthand on what makes a successful brand or product. Anyways, it's really fascinating. It's all about entrepreneurship, all about starting a successful business. I think if that's something you want to do, you're going to get a lot out of this podcast. So let's do this. All right, Richard and Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brett. Pleasure to be with you, bud.
Likewise. Yeah. Thanks, Brett.
All right, just so we know who I'm talking to, can you be like, hey, this is Andy, or hey, this is Richard?
So this is Andy, and Richard has the radio voice, so there's really no mistaking the two of us.
Yeah, hey, Brad, Richard here, and I'd say Andy has the TV anchor face.
So. All right, so you guys are the founders of Huckberry, and if you have been reading the site for a few years, you guys know who Huckberry is. We do a giveaway with them every week. We've been a partner with them for a while back. So I'm really excited to have you guys on the show to talk about how Huckberry started, talk about being entrepreneurs, talk about the war stories of starting your own business in the men's lifestyle genre, and maybe get some cool insights about this really cool company that you guys started.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right, so let's get a little background on you, because you guys are young guys, relatively speaking. What did you guys do before Huckberry? How old are you? Why did you start Huckberry?
Brett, Richard here. So I was just telling somebody the story about this earlier today, and Andy and I followed very identical life paths. We both went to school on the East Coast. I went to Villanova. Andy went to UVA. We both graduated in 2007 and were sort of funneled to New York City, as we were both working in finance at that time, which at that point in time was, sort of still the hot thing to work in. I actually got transferred out to San Francisco in, I think, March of 2008. And Andy got transferred out here in August of 2008, and didn't know each other, same exact path, and met at a mutual friend's party out here, and sort of became good friends. And, we were active and outdoorsy, and, we're on a ski trip one time, and you start throwing around ideas with your buddies, and you've done it 100 times, and you never think one of these will take hold. And one of those ideas sort of took hold, and, I can let Andy kind of dive in a little bit more of the specifics here, but it was just one of those things where, you're messing around, you've had some drinks one night, and the next thing you know, you're quitting your jobs to sort of dive in head first.
Yeah, and you know, just to piggyback on that, Brett, it's Andy speaking. One of the funny things that Rich and I figured out after the fact is when I moved to San Francisco, we lived on the same block. And before we met at a party that one of our buddies hosted, I think it was around like Great White Sharks. He was like a Great White Shark photographer, hosted mm-hmm. a party. That was when Rich and I met. We found out that we actually lived on the same block in New York and didn't know each other. So, I mean, we literally pretty, you know, we had pretty identical paths just all the way through starting Huckberry. And then, you know, now I like to joke, I'm basically, I have two marriages, married to my wife and married to Richard. So life has converged even more.
Do you guys argue like you're married?
Yeah.
At times.
And you know, honestly, like, I think just like you learn in marriage, like learning how to resolve, you know, resolve problems and how do you speak to each other and how do you reinforce each other? Like, it's just as important in a business partnership as it is in a marriage.
So, yeah. Okay. So you guys were in finance. How old were you at the time, right before you guys started doing the Huckberry thing?
I think we were 25, 26.
Yeah.
So yeah. We were pretty young. We had both been analysts at investment banks. And, you know, after you sort of do your 3 years, which feel like dog years, you know, you have to figure out, do you want to sort of stay in the game and you know, grind it out and build a career or not? And, you know, San Francisco is just so different from New York. I was staying in corporate housing, in sort of the same corporate housing where a lot of the Y Combinator guys were, like the first class or two. So I think founder of Dropbox was in there. A bunch of other guys, and you know, the spirit of San Francisco is all around entrepreneurship, and you know, being sort of the finance guy, or you know, I'll take a shot at you, Brett, you know, the lawyer guy, you know, you're sort of the butt of many different of many jokes, and you know, everyone celebrates entrepreneurship. So for us, we kind of had to make a decision, you know, as far as kind of what path to go down. And it just made it that much easier being out here because everyone, you know, all our friends were kind of supporting it. I think if we were still in New York and you know, had come up with an idea to start a business in an industry we had absolutely, you know, no experience in, you know, we probably would have been, you know, laughed out of the room. But I think here, you know, San Francisco, they sort of support that.
Yeah. All right. So you guys started talking. You guys met at a party. Started talking. Then you became friends. Kind of shared the common interest in outdoor stuff. Where did the idea of Huckberry come from? How did you guys generate this idea? We're going to create this. Well, before we get there, for those who aren't familiar with Huckberry, can you kind of just give the elevator pitch of what Huckberry is? Because sometimes it's like it's hard to explain. Like when people ask me like, "What's Huckberry?" I'm like, "It's kind of hard to explain to folks unless they see."
Yeah. It is, you know, hard to explain. I think, you know, at our core, we're an online shop and journal for guys. You know, the way I like to sort of explain it is, you know, we're out there trying to find the next Patagonia before it's Patagonia. You know, these really cool emerging brands that are doing great things. They're doing it the right way. You know, they're creating great products. You know, as much as possible, we love brands where, you know, they make their product here in the U.S. So that's sort of the kind of what it all boils down to. I think the thing that, you know, Rich and I use to kind of, you know, steer the ship here is sort of our unofficial mission statement, which we should probably put our heads together and make it official at some point or put a little more thought into it. But it's basically to inspire more active, adventurous and stylish lives and to do that through content and commerce.
Awesome. So you guys are sort of like curators in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for us, like the real value that we provide with these brands is just being storytellers. You know, they have such great stories to tell. It makes our life really easy. And just, you know, giving them sort of more reach across the country. And that was sort of the genesis of Huckberry in many ways, was that we saw, you know, all these really cool brands that had like cult followings in like San Francisco or New York. Or in the Midwest, and you know, they're just making great product, and they just really didn't have sort of distribution, and so we kind of saw the opportunity to get in there and, you know, highlight a lot of these brands and show our East Coast friends, you know, what everyone's doing on the on the West Coast, and you know, Rich is from the Midwest, and so he knew about a bunch of brands and was kind of plugged in there. So it really is at our core, we're discovery.
Very cool. So you guys got this idea. You saw a need for curation or helping people get the word out about these really cool brands. How long did it take to take that idea and turn it into an actual business?
It's a good question. Ultimately, from sort of date we quit our jobs and were able to fully commit to the idea until Huckberry was live was 5 or 6 months all in. I think we had figured out the general sort of business plan and route we were going to take, in a couple of months. And then from there, it was sort of technical, building the website, figuring out, all the logistics behind running an e-commerce business and that sort of thing that was part of the reason it took us 6 months instead of 2 or 3. And that was, called a little over 4 years ago. So it's interesting. The world's become much, much sort of simpler to start a brand or an e-commerce site. So, I think realistically you could probably be, 3 or 4 months. It took us 6, and that's partially because of when we started it and then also having, pretty much zero technical knowledge and just figuring out things as we go along. So 6 months all in for us, but you could probably do it less.
All right. So you guys actually quit your jobs before you started getting into this heavy. Is that right?
Yeah. You got to go all in. I think some people can kind of do it on the side, but you get to that point where you kind of have to, burn the boats on the beach, so to speak. And just sort of dive all in, especially for something as involved as, an e-commerce site, and particularly our model, which, our model isn't, make a shirt and sell it and just put another, order for that shirt and sell the next batch. Like, the Huckberry site refreshes, multiple times during the week, and it's just so involved that there's just no way we could have, moonlighted the project.
Yeah. I mean, so, okay, did you guys have any experience in retail before this, or did you have to, sort of learn on the fly?
We learned 100% on the fly.
Wow.
So, I think this sort of taking a quick step back, one of the sort of genesis is on the customer or user side is that we didn't think that any commerce or shopping sites really spoke to us. Very often, the shopping sites are going to be for really high end, $5,000 suit type people, or sort of the really high end outdoor performance. I'm climbing Mount Everest and sort of super technical. And Andy and I were sort of the everyday guys, the guys in the middle that just weren't being properly served and weren't being sort of spoken to from the commerce side. So, that was really sort of a big part of it for us.
And Brett, to kind of piggyback on that, it's funny in that I think, there are brands out there like Polar, which I know you're familiar with, mm-hmm. who basically sort of, built their model around that. Like, most people, up until kind of the Polar movement, I would sort of call it, and there are a bunch of other brands like Polar now, but it was all Everest this, Everest that. And most guys were like, no, I actually just want to go into the backwoods and go camping with my family this weekend or with my buddies. And so we definitely saw kind of the convergence of what we call urban and outdoor that, there are these brands out there that were really tailored to guys who, lived in the city or in the suburbs, but, loved the outdoors. And, a funny story that we always tell is Rich went to, I think was it SIA or Outdoor Retailer, one of these big outdoor trade shows, trying to go, sign up all these brands and kind of sell them on Huckberry. And he had no site. We didn't have a site that was live. The only thing that we had was I picked up a Photoshop for Dummies book and I made us some pretty slick business cards. So he's walking around, to all these big brands like Patagonia and the North Face, trying to get them signed up and just kind of getting laughed away. And the one sort of relationship should give you more credit. I'm sure you developed more relationships than just one. But the one that was sort of meaningful was Benji, the founder of Polar, who at that point didn't have any product on his side. He just had these heat bags. So I think Rich exchanged a heat bag for one of his slick business cards, and you know, just kind of had like a similar viewpoint, and it's become one of our, you know, best relationships.
That's awesome. So, okay. So it sounds like you learned Photoshop on your own, because you guys do all the graphic stuff for our Huckberry things.
And yeah. So, you know, the genesis of it was, you know, Rich and I had this idea. We love gear, saw the opportunity. I had no experience in retail. You know, obviously we're not, you know, technical founders either. And so we partnered with Richard's
childhood friend's little brother, was getting his computer science degree at Berkeley.
So yeah.
He moonlit with us and helped us sort of build out Huckberry 1.0, get the site off the ground. And the perspective that we took was, you know, let's get something, you know, nicely put together, but it's more important to get the site launched, get product out there, and start getting feedback from people and from brands and suppliers, which I think is one really big key for startups and entrepreneurialism, which is, you know, this motto that we live by, and it's called, you always throw out your first pancake. So get cooking.
Yeah.
And so it was really about getting a product out there, getting Huckberry started, and then the feedback you get from your customers is infinitely more valuable than showing a website to your friends or to advisors and getting feedback from them. So it was really about let's get a pretty good product out there and get it launched, and then kind of refine from there.
Yeah. And Brett, you know this, like, so Rich and I, kind of in our like finance group of friends, we're sort of like, you know, one of the very few entrepreneurs. So we get every sort of, I have an idea, can I talk about it? You know, email that's out there. And, you know, many of them are sort of in business school. And, you know, the real world, as we like to call it, is just so different from business school, where, you know, you're in business school, you have an idea. You know, you basically pitch it to the class, and it's sort of a safe place, right? Like, you're pitching the business, and you're in an environment where the teachers are being paid to listen to you, and the students are being paid to provide, you know, provide feedback. And then you get into the real world, and it's like, I remember when we were sort of, you know, pitching Huckberry to people, they just don't even respond to the email. Mm-hmm. And so that really does show the importance of just like putting a product out there and letting people vote with their wallets. And at some point, you know, you kind of have to stand on your own two feet.
That's awesome. I love the pancake. You throw out your first pancake. That's true. I throw out my first pancake. And you guys, there's something I think a lot of people don't know as well, is that you guys handle most of the shipping as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we do. Which was, it first started off as, you know, Andy and I shipping out of our apartments, which was, yeah. You know, girlfriends and wives weren't too happy about that one. But we basically had a schedule where that we knew the mail pickup was, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And at 3 o'clock, pencils down, everybody, and we'd start packing boxes and run them over to the post office before it closed for the nightly shipment. And it went from shipping, you know, 5 packages a day to 10 packages a day, and now we're shipping, you know, sometimes thousands of packages a day.
That's crazy. And yeah. You guys have, like, you guys have upgraded since I last saw you.
Yeah.
But, well, last time I was in San Francisco a few years ago, and I went, yeah, like a garage. It was insane. It was just like packages everywhere, and you have like a team who handles. And that's like, you know, someone who's got, I'm just gotten started in e-commerce, I know like the shipping and fulfillment, that's really complex and complicated. A lot of people, when they get in, they want to start an online business where they're selling a product. They think that, oh, it's going to be easy, but it's a lot more, it's tricky. It's hard.
Yeah, it's very tricky. And that's one of the things that's, One of the biggest challenges to growing a larger e-commerce business is figuring those sort of operational and fulfillment, figuring out those problems. And you know, you don't think about it, but once you go from shipping 10 packages a day to 100 packages a day, your customer service inbounds will 10x, and you have to start figuring that out. And then, yeah, it really becomes quite challenging to figure out the logistics and operational side. But it's something where, you know, if orders start coming in, you're gonna figure it out. So it's again, you know, learning by fire and throwing out that pancake as you grow.
All right. So you guys, you said you started 4 years ago. So that was like 2010. You guys officially went into business.
It was May 2011.
May 2011.
Yeah, we quit our jobs in I think September or October of 10, and then
launched the site April 2011.
April 7th.
All right. So it was just you two at the beginning.
Yep.
Shipping stuff out of your apartments. How big is your team now?
So we've got, call it about 16 of us in the office, maybe 17, depending on how you count part-time people, and then another dozen or so that are working in our warehouse. So close to 30 people between sort of, you know, full-time and part-time and then warehouse staff.
That's crazy. Well, that's amazing. That's phenomenal that you guys have gotten so big so fast. All right. I know early on, guys, that you didn't take venture capital to start your business. And I know you guys are in San Francisco. You're talking about the whole idea of, you know, entrepreneurship is really big in that area. And a big part of that culture is like everyone wants venture capital. Everybody wants that money for their startup. Why did you guys make that decision not to take venture capital?
I think, Brett, I there's sort of a few things. When we were sort of you know, standing on the ledge of whether to jump into this or not, I think one of the sites and blogs we read a lot and that we really subscribed to was 37 Signals, and I guess their blog's called Signals versus Noise. And the founder Jason Fried has since written a few books, Rework. I think there's like one or two others, and he's just a huge fan of sort of bootstrapping your business and you know. I think it was sort of in our DNA in that, like, you know, we graduated from school, went into a white collar job, but I think we have a pretty like blue collar mentality when it comes down to it, and that we both love getting our hands dirty and kind of rolling up our sleeves and you know, picking up Photoshop for Dummies. You know, that's how we designed the site and just doing things really, really cheaply. So I think, you know, that was sort of. And you know, honestly, we were pretty lucky to choose a business model where, you know, we could sort of afford to do that. And that, you know, like if you're starting, you know, a button down t-shirt company, and you know, your sort of capital requirements are that, you know, you have to pay money 6 months before you can actually, you know, to buy the fabric and get it, you know, cut and sewn. And then, you know, you launch it to the public and you know, your cash flow cycles, you're getting paid, you know, 6 months after you cut that first check. We were lucky in that, you know, starting in the beginning, it was, you know, primarily sort of a pre-sale model with our customers. So it was a combination of you know, wanting to kind of control our own destiny, which is what bootstrapping allows you to do, choosing a business that sort of allowed us to bootstrap and that was bootstrap friendly. I think one of the things we say, you know, to every entrepreneur is like, if you can, you know, if you can afford to bootstrap your business, absolutely do it. We're huge fans of it, but we also recognize that it's one, it's not for every model, it's not for every person, and you know, they're absolutely. You know, some trade-offs in that, you know, we definitely grow a lot slower than we could. And, you know, part of that is just risk tolerance, but also, you know, if we raise money, it would be, you know, kind of pedal to the metal. But I don't know. It's like, I think in many ways, it's particularly early on, you're just trying to like, you know, find your niche and find your voice and find yourself and find the business. And I think, it was nice not raising venture capital and sort of being forced to just grow like crazy when maybe you're not even growing the right business, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And do you guys still get approached? I'm sure you guys get approached by people who want a stake in the business.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, it's so cool. I mean, it's just, it's a really cool model you guys have going. But it's great. You've maintained that control, and have grown at your own pace. So you started in 2011. And at this time, there were sort of sites like yours that were popping up, like these sort of curated membership deal sites where, you know, you sign up and every week there's like a new lineup and you get, you know, some discounts. Like there's Guilt and I forgot some of the other ones. Like they just all seem to pop up at the same time. And so how did you guys set yourself apart from the pack? And I think you've kind of, referenced it a little bit in your conversation, but what did you guys do to make yourselves different from all those other curated store sites?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things, Brad. First off is when, from day one of starting Huckberry, we always wanted to sort of tell the story of our brand partners first. So we weren't all about putting product in your face and just being pushy and product focused. We were about, let's go find really cool people that are doing really cool things and making awesome products and leading with telling that story. So I think our focus, you know, has always been story first, and let's sort of get behind why we love this brand or this product. And so that has really developed the story first and content approach to commerce that has really developed over time into a full blown, journal blog that gets, you know, great traffic and is sort of something that really separates us from most other commerce sites out there. So there is, that's definitely a big part of it.
And you know, I think a few other ways we sort of, you know, differentiate ourselves early on. I think as time has gone on, like, we've definitely found our voice even more. I think we've got like more dialed in on like what exactly our edit is, what's like a Huckberry brand, what's the Huckberry way of saying that. And you know, again, it all kind of comes back to storytelling and you know, really just trying to be a signal in sort of a market where there's a lot of noise. So, a lot of these other, shopping sites, whether it's members only or even just retail, you know, a lot of these retailers, they sort of lead with like the best deal. So they'll call up a brand and they'll say, hey, like, what can I buy for 70% off wholesale? And they're like, oh, well, you know, have some stuff from 2011 I couldn't move that I could sell you, you know, for pennies on the dollar. And our mentality is like, hey, let's go find the coolest brands and then let's bring our readers like the absolute like best selection from the coolest brand. And then, you know, we don't need to buy it 70% off wholesale because we want, like, we basically have two customers. We want our brands to come back to us and give us exclusive product and exclusive releases and collaborate. But we also want our customers to kind of get a great deal. So that's why when you're on Huckberry, you know, it's typically 10% off, 15% off, but it's the best price on the internet, we would argue it's sort of the best, you know, product selection.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of what sold me on it eventually. That's, you know, I can kind of tell the story. It's kind of funny. So like when you guys approached me back in, I guess, 2011, about, hey, do you want to be an affiliate and, you know, help, you know, work with us? I was like, I was getting inundated with like emails from people who were like, hey, I got this membership deal site. And I was just like, my default answer became no. Yeah. And so I told you guys no.
Like, yeah. We do an axe giveaway with you, actually.
Yeah. but you guys were persistent and you finally got me on the phone and like you like were able to tell me like this is your vision, like what you wanted to do. That was like, it's like sort of like outdoor stuff for like the guy who lives in the suburbs or the cities. And you know, telling stories about how you can use this stuff to like go live a life of adventure and like do cool stuff. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And since then, it's been a fantastic partnership.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly has, Brett. Andy and I remember the day very specifically when you did a nice write up about some of the different men's shopping sites out there. And you sort of mentioned Huckberry's, you know, head above shoulders of the rest, and that was definitely a big day for us to have your endorsement. One thing that we've really tried to do as we've grown and sort of figured out our path and the business life is one thing you mentioned was being persistent, and then two, finding people to partner with that are, like, you're going to form a deep partnership deep relationship with, somebody that sort of sees the world through your lens and you it just sort of makes sense. Like you would be friends outside of the, you know, the internet world. And so I think, you know, you were sort of very early on in that approach. And that's something that we've just really maintained throughout our you know, 3.5-4 years of being in business, is trying to partner with people that just make a lot of sense, and not going out there and partnering with everybody, and trying to establish more meaningful, deeper partnerships.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to make, because there are a lot of young entrepreneurs who get this idea that it's sort of just the numbers game, right? Like, make as many phone calls, send as many emails, as even if like the people you're contacting like wouldn't be a good fit for you,
mm-hmm, right? Right.
And it's just such a waste of time. And instead, yeah, if they would just focus and like actually find those people who would be, they would off provide value to them, and they would provide value to, they would get value from them. It would just be much more effective.
Yeah. You know, Brett, to this day, I mean, I know Rich and I sort of credit you with, you know, sort of our big break in many ways, and, you know, are just sincerely thankful of sort of the, you know, friendship and partnership that we've come up with. One thing I don't know if I ever told you, I remember I was on my honeymoon in Brazil with my wife, Kate. And I remember kind of, I woke up in the middle of the night and was like answering Huckberry emails and just kind of like thinking about some of our growth plans. I remember just like writing a bunch of like partners I thought made sense. And then at the top of the list was you, and I just circled it. I was like, man, we just have to make this happen. Like, it's such a great, you know, just from like a value standpoint and how we look at the world, it's just such a great partnership. And that's probably why you got, you know, 7 emails the next week. And I've sort of caveat that by saying that I'm kidding, and yeah, please don't send Brett 7 yeah emails. That's not the way to do it. But yeah. That was sort of the start of it.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic partnership, and I've loved working with you guys. And like Richard said, it's like we're friends outside of outside of the internet, right?
Yeah,
which is awesome. Yeah. I was going to tell you guys, speaking of like how big you've gotten, I saw a Huckberry adventure cap in the wild in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
No way.
Yeah, I went to go get donuts with my kid, and there's this guy sitting outside eating donuts. He's like a student here in Tulsa, and he's wearing the Huckberry hat. And I was like, hey, nice hat. And he's like, and he recognized me from the website. He's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was cool, though, to see a Huckberry hat in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Brett, I have a similar story for you real quick. So you're obviously familiar with GoRock. You've done a couple of challenges. We host this sort of annual or semi-annual party with them called War Stories and Beer, where they, you know, they come to our offices, and we clear everything out, and they have – you know, some of the GoRock, what are they called?
Cadres.
And they give up, they go up there and they talk about experiences from their time at war and coming back to Huckberry, or coming back to, you know, the United States and readjusting and everything. And it's a great night. And, you know, you're raising money for the Wounded Warriors and et cetera, et cetera. And so we hosted one of those about 3 months ago. And this guy comes up to Andy and I, and he goes, oh, are you Andy and Richard? And we start talking to him. And it turns out he was turned on to Huckberry through you way back in the day, 2 or 3 years ago. Through Huckberry, he learned about GoRock and has since done, you know, 5 or 6 challenges with them. And he flew out from Washington, D.C. to come out to the GoRock War Stories at the Huckberry offices.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was just like a total, you know, just one of those great, great evenings to hear that story.
That's all. And I want to talk more about some of that stuff that you guys are doing, going beyond just retail and telling stories, because you guys are doing more than that. We'll get to that in a second. But let's get to this first. So you guys are in this position now where you're tastemakers, right? Brands, it used to be that you'd have to like go to the retail, conventions or whatever those things are called.
Conventions, yeah.
Yeah. And try to like, hey, you know, pitch your business to them. But now companies are coming to you, right? And yes, a few years ago, it seemed like there was really a dearth of quality, like products for men. But these days, every time I turn around, I see some new startup that's turning out leather bags or journal covers or a canvas doc kit or like stuff made from wood or manly soap or what. I mean, you guys know, you guys have seen this stuff. Do you think the market for these kind of products, is it saturated? And if there's a guy out there who's like, I want to start some sort of male lifestyle product, What advice would you give that guy who's thinking about starting a business in that niche?
Yeah. So, you know, Brett, I think, you know, specifically, you know, I'll sort of start with leather, because it seems like we see more leather products than anything else. You know, the thing about leather is that it's really easy to, you know, create a, you know, let's say a wallet business, you know, design a really nice, you know, a good looking wallet, use the right leather. You know, maybe you contract out the work, maybe you do it yourself, put it on the internet, post some pretty pictures and sell a few thousand. The problem is, you know, that can almost be sort of a false indicator, because, you know, it's easy to create a leather business where you can sell a few thousand. It's really tough to build, like, you know, $1 million a year, you know, leather business, or maybe it's $500,000 a year. But, and that's because the market is so saturated that, you know, there's this real desire and hunger for great leather products. But, you know, building sort of a sustainable business outside of just kind of a, you know, a pet project, can be really tough. And I think, you know, a lot of guys have maybe, you know, started selling stuff on Etsy and, you know, and then kind of jumped in and found that, you know, it wasn't sort of, the market wasn't as, you know, robust or as supportive of their vision as they thought. So that's just sort of one thing to keep an eye on. I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to, like, viewpoint. You know, my first boss said, you know, having a viewpoint and like a distinct viewpoint is worth 20 IQ points. And it's something that I think we sort of ingrained here at Huckberry, like with the brand. You know, when we're sort of assessing a brand, it's like, it's a crowded market. Why this brand above, you know, above anything else? Is it, you know, is it great value? Is it, you know, is there sort of a craftsmanship story? You know, how authentic is sort of the brand? And so, you know, the storytelling component of it, which is the thing that we focus on, and which is really what gets these brands in the door, is the most important thing. So if you don't have a viewpoint and you're just doing something because you don't want to, you know, you don't like your 9-to-5 job and you're just looking for an out, I think that can be like a pretty scary, you know, path to go down.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, what about guys who, like, I mean, with the leather thing, there's people who I think are really trying to start a brand. Right. Yeah, they try to come up with a story, right? About, you know, they talk about sort of the catchwords, like American craftsmanship, mm-hmm. made in USA, you know, like some of those buzzwords that are really artisanal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a story there, but like, if stories are what's really important in commerce today, how do you come up with a story that sets you apart?
It's definitely a lot trickier now than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. You know, things that we look for when we're evaluating inbounds is going to be, what did that person do before they went to leather? Like, is there a story of why they got into it, or were they working sort of around the peripherals of leather or in craftsmanship? Like why did they get involved? Was it just because they didn't like their 9-to-5 and they want to quit? Or is it a sort of a family tradition that's been passed down through the generations? Or is it, you know, you grew up on a horse ranch and you know, worked with leather your whole life, right? So like, trying to find, like, what's the real story behind somebody doing something? Or is it just, I want to start a business, this is trendy right now, I'm going to get into American-made leather products.
Yeah.
So that's definitely it. Like, do you really have an angle, or do you have something that, like, makes you really want to be doing it, not just because it's the trendy thing? So that's definitely something, like, follow your passion in whatever you do. And if you're not passionate about what you do, you're not going to be successful. And that's one of the core things about Huckberry. Like, we started Huckberry for us because we didn't think there was something out there that was speaking to us. So make sure you're passionate about what you do, because it is a pain in the butt at times. It's wonderful at times, but it's something that you have to really love to be able to be successful at.
All right. So I'm sure. So yeah. Okay. You guys see a lot of, like, upstart businesses. Some last. Most of them don't. What are the successful entrepreneurs doing that the not so successful ones are not doing?
They keep going. I mean, you can start with that. You know, just keep going, keep the feet moving. You know, and I think it's sort of a combination of things. I think one, you know, the successful ones are playing the long game. You know, like we're a e-commerce retailer, but I think the secret sauce of the Huckberry brand is built on personal relationships. Going to these trade shows, getting out in the community, you know, having face-to-face, developing, you know, relationships. So even though, you know, the customer has like sees a experience online that's, you know, feels digital, there's so much humanness behind it. And I think, you know, that's been sort of one thing that has done wonders for us. And I think for a lot of these brands that, you know, like if you're a leather brand and you're, you know, super passionate about what you're doing and, you know, you're out there kind of forging industry relationships, I think that really goes a long way. So I think some of the unsuccessful ones sort of discount that and, you know, they sort of send those impersonal blast emails, dear Mr. Art of Manliness.
Yeah.
Didn't even take the time to look up your name. You know, I started a leather company, you know, here's the price. Like, you know, let's do a giveaway. And, you know, and they probably got your name wrong, right?
Yeah, they always get my name wrong. Brent, or like, yeah. Called sort of also Brad or whatever.
And so it's really, it's the sniff test, you know? It's like, are these guys playing the long game? And so, you know, Rich kind of alluded to this earlier, but it really is like, are they just kind of, you get the sense that they're doing things the right way and that they're really in it for, you know, they aren't trying this out for 3 months, but they're in it because they think they're going to be doing this 5 years from now. And I think those who have that sort of long-term vision, it sort of, you know, trickles down to the decisions they make each day and sort of how they build the brand, how they go about selling their product. And so that's
Brad, just to hop in here real quick, for me, and I know Andy shares this as well, it's you have to be a doer. It's all about action when you're starting a company and getting things going and trying and learning by mistakes. And you can't overthink things. You can't make the best product out there. You have to really start doing. And so we look for someone that's got a lot of initiative and that's really just is so hungry to get going. You have to hold them back, really. And that sense of doing is really, really important, especially at an early stage startup.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make because I feel like a lot of people have this idea that I have to have the perfect business plan before I can get started. And I have to like know like everything about whatever it is I'm doing to, you know, before I actually get started on something. But the thing is, like, the way you really learn how to run a business is just getting your hands dirty. Like I've seen some like in my area where, you know, people want to like always get it. I'm always getting asked questions like, how do I start a successful blog? And like, they want to sit down and like, they have all these questions and they never get started though. It's just like, I'm just telling you, you just got to get started. Just get something out there.
Brett, you know, my sort of favorite, or I should say one of my favorite, quotes on entrepreneurship was actually by Mike Tyson. And he said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Right. And I think that's a great way to look at it. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face and you have to get out there and, you know, see whether, you know, you can, you know, stand up on your own, you know, 2 feet and take those hits.
Awesome. I'm glad we got some Mike Tyson wisdom in here.
Yeah. There's not much of it.
All right. So I think a lot of people might look at you two and think that you guys have like the ultimate dream job. I mean, I'm sure they just imagine like all you're doing is going out into the redwoods or, you know, you guys that's nearby and camping and testing out cool gear and writing blog posts about it. What's your job really like? Is it as dreamy as folks imagine?
No,
not at all.
It's one of those things where there are moments where I think to myself, like, wow, I can't believe this is my job. This is awesome. But for every one of those, there's five of, you know, this massive headache, or you're up all night, you know, five nights in a row trying to figure out a problem. You know, running a business is definitely learning how to put out fires. And whatever comes at you, you have to find a solution. So it's one of those things like you can't even imagine how many fires there are in the world until you start running a business.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is like we work really, really hard. I think, you know, that's probably something that, you know, maybe from the outside people don't appreciate as much, but everyone here works really, really hard. I think, you know, part of that is we're bootstrapped and you know, we make every penny count. And I think there is a bit of self-selection in that, you know, we're hard workers. So we bring in hard workers who have great attitude and sort of great fits with the Huckberry culture and kind of take our brand forward. But, you know,
that said, we also make sure to play at times and, like it's definitely an environment where, you know, you're encouraged to take a half day on Friday so you can get up and beat the traffic in the mountains and that sort of thing. So it's definitely a balance, but we work hard though. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of, particularly young people, I mean, they have this dream of starting like a lifestyle business, right? Kind of like what you guys do. And they imagine, oh, if I start this, then I'm my own boss and I'll be able to like just drop whenever I'm doing and it'll be amazing. Right. But they don't think about the logistics, right? That you get into once you get bigger, problems get bigger and they grow exponentially. And, it's just like, you don't think about, I think a lot of people, they don't think about that part when they go into starting a business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More money, more problems.
All right. So let's talk about, Huckberry's future. So you mentioned a little bit about how you do these sort of meetups, right? You do the Go Ruck, War Stories and Beer. You did the, Huckberry Holiday Home last year. So it seems like your guys are trying to actually get people physically together. It's not just online. Is that sort of like the future of Huckberry, where you want to get people together in front of each other?
Yeah. You know, again, kind of circling the wagon back to the mission statement of inspiring more active, adventurous, and stylish lives. Like, you know, right now we do that through commerce and we do that through content. But I think going forward, you know, we want to do that both in commerce and content better, but also we want to do it through, you know, in-person experiences and events. And you know, I think the thing we're trying to do with Huckberry is really build a community of you know, like-minded brands and people and blogs and you know, create cool experiences that don't kind of currently exist in the world and put all those people together. So Brett, I know, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, doing the Huckberry Holiday Home and you know, doing Huckberry on the Road or you know, an Art of Manliness and Huckberry event and just, you know, kind of putting our heads together and sort of creating you know, a cool AOM and HB experience.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome if we could do that. But right now you guys are doing that like Huckberry on the Road, right? With the band. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so we threw a party with Topo Designs in Denver this past Thursday. So just got back from that. Awesome event. So the genesis of Huckberry on the Road is, you know, we have all these great relationships with brands all across the country. You know, really cool factories behind these brands. A lot of these brands make their products in the U.S. And we sort of wanted a conduit to kind of tell their stories, you know, in person, either through video or through pictures or through local meetups. And so our good friend John Gaffney, who, you know, in the past has written for Valet and Gear Patrol and a few other publications, told us of his dream to kind of quit his 9-to-5 job and you know, travel the world and sort of document, or travel the U.S., I should say, and document a lot of these guys, and sort of dovetailed exactly with what we're trying to do. So we sponsored him to do it, and sort of the you know, official tagline is, you know, exploring America and documenting its makers, bakers, movers, and shakers. It's sort of the fun tagline we came up with. And so through our first event in Denver, had a great time, met a lot of AOM readers there, which was just awesome. Again, kind of like what Richard was saying with the GoRec event, just so fun. And you know, it's amazing to see the impact that, you know, you're having out there. And it's just awesome when sort of our two worlds collide. And so, you know, the punchline is Huckberry on the Road is coming to many more cities. I think Portland is one of the next events we have coming up. And hopefully, you know, maybe Tulsa, man.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and it's definitely about sort of, you know, encouraging sort of the experiential side of Huckberry. So lots of meetups and happy hours and hikes and all those kind of things. So it's really about, you know, telling the story of our brand partners and what they're doing, and then also meeting the Huckberrians out there and trying to do some cool stuff with them while we're on the road.
Very cool. Well, Andy and Rich, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Brad. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great long weekend.
You too.
Our guests today were Andy Forch and Richard Greiner. They are the co-founders of Huckberry, and you can find out more about Huckberry by going to huckberry.com. And if you haven't signed up for the newsletter yet, if you use the URL aom.is/huckberry, that's aom.is/huckberry, you'll get a $5 credit on your first purchase with Huckberry. And yes, full transparency, that is an affiliate link, so I'll make a small percentage of the sales on that, which will help support the podcast and everything else that goes with the podcast. So I'd really appreciate that. And you get $5 credit, which is great. So yeah, it's huckberry.com. That wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy this podcast and you feel like you've gotten something out of it, I'd really appreciate it if you go to iTunes or Stitcher or whatever it is you use to listen to your podcast and give us a rating. That would help us out a lot. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.